Hello and welcome to the Kunstler Cast. Thanks for listening. My guest is Dr. Geert Vandenbosch, a globally renowned virologist working in Belgium. He predicts a hyper-acute crisis of COVID-19 illness among highly vaccinated populations to emerge shortly across the world. He argues that scientists and politicians have turned a natural viral pandemic into a crisis of disastrous immune escape. Dr. Vandenbosch's papers and talks can be found at the website voiceforscienceandsolidarity.org. Thank you very much for joining me on this podcast, Dr. Geert Vandenbosch from Belgium. You are a highly regarded, world-renowned virologist, a veterinary virologist, correct?
Well, I would, I got trained in veterinary medicine, but basically most of my work in virology has been on human viruses.
So virology is virology.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, as long as you straighten that out. Whatever COVID is, whether it is a real thing or a figment, the response by governments has been impressively disastrous. How did you feel and what did you think watching it play out as it occurred?
Well, I was probably one of the very first that publicly reacted as soon as I realized that they were taking a real public health action. And the real public health action was, of course, that they declared this an emergency, a health emergency of international concern. So I've worked with these organizations. I know about the high level of incompetence of these organizations at the top. This doesn't mean that they don't have competent people, but at the top, these people are very incompetent. So I was not surprised to hear that they came with measures after we had seen already the infection prevention measures, the disasters thereof. But then with the mass vaccination, I knew immediately that this was to a large extent due to a complete misjudgment of the situation. And then, of course, the industry taking advantage of the incompetence of organizations like WHO, which, of course, have a lot to say. And basically, I've looked at this never from a conspiracy viewpoint, but it's essentially from a viewpoint of, incompetence of the decision makers. As I told you, I worked with these organizations. I know what's happening at the very top. I know what kind of agendas they have. I know about the bureaucracy. I know about the conflicts of interest, etc. And within that whole context, the science disappears, right? The science completely disappears. Mm-hmm. And that was the reason why I reacted, and I kept, reacting to this, yeah.
Well, most listeners are probably not professional scientists. Mm-hmm. And can you say in plain language why it's a bad idea to vaccinate a population in the teeth of an epidemic disease?
Yeah, well, the simple or almost like simplistic explanation would be that the example I gave in the past is you go to the battlefield and you arrive at the battlefield, and at that very moment you realize that you have not loaded your gun, right? So you start loading your gun while already being on the battlefield. Of course, that's bad because you are not prepared, obviously. And that's exactly what happened with the pandemic. When you start vaccinating people during a time where they all are already exposed to the virus, that's the definition of a pandemic. This virus that spreads globally. And so we know that if you vaccinate, you have to wait for a couple of weeks till you have a fully functional gun, a fully functional immune system that recognizes the virus and that can eliminate it. So that is also the reason why usually we have a booster vaccination. The first priming dose, then the booster dose, it all takes approximately 2 to 3 weeks at least till you have full-fledged immunity. That's also the reason why if we travel to one or the other country where there is a disease we know we can vaccinate against, we do this before we travel. We don't first travel to that region where there is some kind of infectious disease, and then we say, oh, wait a minute, we are going to vaccinate ourselves. No. So because then you come too late. And what happens then is that you are confronting the virus while a lot of people, when you do mass vaccination, what is what we did, while a lot of people have only partial immunity. So it's not fully protective. And because it's not fully protective, it doesn't really kill the virus. It makes the virus life more difficult, of course. It's more difficult for the virus to replicate and propagate in an environment where there is a lot of immune attack. But as you know, and your listeners will know, that viruses, especially also RNA viruses, they not only replicate, but they also mutate. So they produce mutants all the time. So that is just how these viruses function and replicate. So now, if amongst the progeny of viruses produced, there are some mutants that can more easily overcome this immune attack, then those mutants will be selected, of course. And these are the mutants that are more infectious, for example. And that is how we have seen that during the mass vaccination campaign, what we have done, or what the population has been doing, the vaccinated population, many people had suboptimal immunity. They have been, in fact, pushing the selection of more infectious variants because those guys could more easily replicate in that hostile environment, hostile for the virus, because there was some partial immunity. So it's always a lot of explanation, but if you tell people, wait a minute, compare this to antibiotics, it will immediately ring a bell with all people. If you tell them, wait, when you take your antibiotics, you have to take the right dose and for a sufficiently long time, because if you have not taken the optimal dose, you stop your cure too early. Or instead of taking 2 pills a day, which you should do according to the prescription, you only take like 1 pill, then the concentration is suboptimal. And what will happen is that you will get resistance of the microbes against the antibiotics. That everybody understands. But if you talk about a virus, where in fact the equivalent of the antibiotics or your natural antibiotics, which are the antibodies that are elicited by the vaccine, and if those titers, those concentrations are not optimal while already confronting the virus, then of course you have the same phenomenon that you will select for resistant viral lineages that will more easily overcome those antibodies elicited by the vaccine or even natural antibodies. And that everybody understands. Everybody understands the parallel with antibiotics. But still, in the field of virology and vaccinology, I was, it seems like I was the first that pronounced these guys, compared this with antibiotics. That is the reason why it's not a good idea to do mass vaccination during a pandemic.
Were you alarmed by the speed that this vaccine was produced, or did you suspect or know that something was going on behind the scenes, in the development of this vaccine?
Well, we were of course all surprised, but again, it all comes down to the misjudgment. Because if you think you are dealing with a virus that has the potential to kill two-thirds of the world population within a very short period of time, because it's a pandemic, it globally spreads, it spreads rapidly, then was like nobody was saying anything, yeah? Because it was an absolute emergency, and the risk-benefit analysis was very clearly in favor of any measures that could be implemented very rapidly and to the global population, and that is what vaccines can do. And so at that time, nobody was really asking the questions that we are hearing right now, because and those questions are legitimate, etc. But it's very interesting that back in those days, 3 years ago, almost nobody was raising questions about the speed of the development of these vaccines, about the limited amount of clinical data, etc., etc. Now, of course, it's easy to make big noise and say, oh yeah, this has not been done and there were contaminations, etc., etc. And I agree with all of this of these elements, but again, the overall climate and the overall landscape was the one where everybody believed that that was what the WHO and some modelers were predicting, that this could have a huge impact and destroy basically lots and lots of lives, people lives. People believed it, and then it was not a question. What is the risk compared to the benefit? Because the risk was simply huge, right? And there were not very many questions asked about the safety, the and the purity and of the vaccines and the limited amount of data, etc., etc. Yeah.
Dr. Vandenbosch, were you acquainted with Dr. Anthony Fauci before this thing happened? Had you met him or come into contact with him? And well, if so,
Not personally, yeah. Not
okay.
I didn't know him on a personal basis. Of course, I knew Fauci and I've seen him. I've been probably also in a couple of meetings together with him, but we never got to know each other in person.
All right. How does it aggravate the situation to add booster shots, to add booster after booster to this vaccination?
Yeah, well, it's as is, I'm having the bad reputation of, so to say, making things complex. But as a matter of fact, things are very, very complex. So to give a simple answer to a very complex phenomenon, I would say the booster shots have primarily been accelerating the immune escape of the virus. So once we had Omicron, the immune escape of the virus was sustained and perpetuated by the vaccine breakthrough infections. Remember, when Omicron came, we have seen plenty of vaccine breakthrough infections. Well, now you have to bear in mind that, in fact, these vaccine breakthrough infections, they were just accelerating and perpetuating the immune escape. And the same applies for the vaccine booster doses. So in other words, to give you a very clear answer or example, after Omicron, not before, but after the advent of Omicron, had we not continued the booster doses, we would still have had a very dire situation where we were no longer able to stop the immune escape in this pandemic. But of course, having had Omicron and on top having administered all those boosters, we have accelerated the pace of the immune escape in the population.
I wonder, as the COVID episode went on, were you alarmed by the bad information being issued by the public health officials about the safety and efficacy of these viruses? I think it's the
Of the
case,
vaccines, you mean?
excuse me,
Okay.
of the vaccines, because I know it's the case in the USA and probably the case in several European nations that the public health officials were denying that there was, or covering up the fact that any problems had been noted in the vaccine effects. Did that alarm
Well,
you?
no, I was not aware. I was not aware. All these things, came on the table later on when people started basically digging, and when FDA, Pfizer, these pharmaceutical companies were ultimately more or less obliged to uncover all the data and to share the data. But there is one thing where my position is completely different from the position of anybody else. And I've been saying this since the very beginning. Why have I not been very much concentrated, being a vaccinologist, on the safety aspects and on the quality of the vaccines? Although I started my career in vaccinology in the quality control department, so I'm very well aware of the kind of testing and also the preclinical testing that normally that normally needs to be conducted on vaccines. The reason was and still is that all the effects that result from let's say the unsafety of these vaccines, or the major safety issues of these vaccines, as well in terms of their immunological effects, as in terms of their purity, etc. So all these secondary effects related to lack of safety of these vaccines are, in my humble opinion, but I'm 200% convinced of what I'm saying, are peanuts, complete peanuts compared to the damage that highly vaccinated populations will suffer as a result, as a final result of the immune escape. And that is why I have always been prioritizing at the population level the consequence of the immune escape, the consequence of vaccinating massively against the virus without being able to keep the virus under control, and promoting, therefore, the selection of more and more dangerous variants. The effect of that will be 1,000 times more important and significant than, when you throw all these side effects together and you add them up. So this is not saying that it's not important that we look at this, that I'm certainly not ridiculing people who are investing a huge amount of time and energy in elucidating all these aspects. But the major concern from a vaccinology viewpoint is the effect of using these vaccines on billions of people without being able to control the virus. I mean, the result of that, the consequence of that will be dramatic. There is no doubt about this, right?
Now, can you tell, do you have any idea what the condition is now of the immune systems of the people who have received, let's say, three or more shots?
Well, again, to express this in simple terms, because there's also a lot of misunderstanding there, and let me tell you upfront that the major shortcoming in the understanding of the pandemic and the impact of the mass vaccination and the impact of all the infection prevention measures, etc., and the lack of insight of our public health authorities and experts in what is going on right now with the virus and with the immune system, the major missing link is the immunology. And that is the key thing, because to your point, first of all, we need to consider to realize that the immune status of an unvaccinated right now is completely different from the immune status of a vaccinated person. Right now, the vaccinated people are still protected by a kind of what I call very fragile immunity. That in fact, it's always what happens is the virus brings some new mutations that can overcome, let's say, the immune attack. And then the immune system can, to some extent, respond again and, to some extent, alleviate the damage that would normally be caused by a more infectious virus. And that goes on for a while. And that is the kind of fragile immunity that the vaccinated people, boosted or fully vaccinated, have been building right now. So they are still protected, but in contrast to the unvaccinated that have durable protection, that have trained their innate immune system, which is completely independent of the variants. So an innate immune system works against all variants, whatever their origin, but you need to train it because it's the first line of immune defense, and normally it's too weak if it is untrained. The vaccinated people right now are completely reliant on their adaptive immune system, which has been, and this is the right word, dysregulated. Many people are talking about tolerance and exhaustion and all these type of things. No, their immune system is dysregulated. It is derailed, and it is no longer focusing on the right aspects, I would say, of the virus. Nevertheless, and this is, of course, complex, the kind of immunity that is still in place is still able to keep the virus, the disease, I would say, under control, the disease, but of course, not the infection. And as everybody can see, the virus is still evolving. The virus is still becoming more and more infectious. The pathology is completely changing. Normally, SARS-CoV-2 causes very typically, like influenza, like many other viruses, causes typically an acute self-limiting infection. That means acute, it happens rapidly, you get ill within a few days, and then you cure it out also in a few days. That is what we call acute self-limiting. You can already see right now how this pattern is changing to a more chronic disease. Yeah, that we call long COVID. So there is complete change, and that has all to do with the dysregulation, of course, of the immune system. So the immune status of the vaccinated people is frail. It's not that immunity is not sustainable, and it will unfortunately. At some point, which I think is unfortunately not in all too far or all too distant future, it will collapse. Now, that doesn't mean that this is going to be the case for every single vaccinee, because, as you know, there is a lot of differences between countries. Some countries have a much higher vaccine coverage than others. Some countries started vaccinating their people very aggressively, very, very rapidly. Some people got exposed first to the virus and got vaccinated later on, whereas others didn't have any opportunity to even, encounter the virus before the vaccination. So these are all differences that make, I would say, the outcome not black or white necessarily. In some cases, yes, but there is also, of course, a gray zone. But basically, in highly vaccinated countries, I predict, and I'm saying this loudly, even if people hate to hear this, there will be dramatic losses of lives due to the collapse of the of the immune system that is facing, that will be facing a virus against which it can no longer protect.
Can you discern any difference in action between the spike proteins that are manufactured in the vaccine and the action of the virus itself in vaccinated people? For example, let's say that we know that the vaccinated people have this manufacturing process going on in their own cells, turning out the spike proteins. But if they get the actual virus inside of them, there's additional action. Excuse me. Additional action. And do you differentiate any quality of action between those two types of?
Well, again, the knowledge that is missing here in most cases or in most opinions is the immunology. So first of all, I don't think it has a lot to do with the quality of the spike protein itself, but it has primarily to do with a number of factors. First of all, that when you transfect people with this mRNA, there is three things that every vaccinologist absolutely wants to know when he vaccinates somebody with an antigen, and that are completely unknown. First of all, is where does the vaccine go? We know that these lipid particles can easily, be disseminated in the body. This is already a vaccine principle that's violated because normally you give the vaccine locally and it's meant to stay at the site of injection and be being degraded within just, sometimes a few hours or a few days. So that is already one of the principles that has been completely of vaccine principles violated with these mRNA vaccines. Second thing is when this spike protein gets expressed on the host cells, you don't know in which amount it is produced, in which amount it is expressed, in which amount it is released from the cells. And whereas we invest a huge amount of time, I told you at the beginning of my career, I worked in the quality control, where you very precisely dose the antigen content in your vaccine. There are specifications, they are very narrow. You absolutely need to stay within those specifications. Here, we just give the mRNA that will, of course, make the cell produce this spike protein, this antigen, but at quantities that we don't know. The second principle of vaccinology completely violated. Third principle of vaccinology violated is that we don't know for how long the spike protein is expressed, right? So all this goes against the fundamental principles of using an antigen for a vaccine. But there is something much more important that most people ignore or are not aware of. And that is an answer, I hope, to your question. What is the difference with the spike protein produced by the virus? When the virus produces the spike protein, so the virus is going to infect cells, of course, and it's going to produce the several different components of the new virions that it's going to produce. And those guys, including the spike protein, are first expressed at the membrane of the infected cell. And then that is where all these components are, joined together to build full-fledged viral particles. So the spike protein as well will be sitting on this membrane for a while. But as soon as the viral particles are produced and the virions are released from that cell, and the cell by this process is, of course, destroyed, there is no longer expression of spike protein on the membrane. So then this spike protein is internalized by professional antigen-presenting cells. These are cells that will digest the antigen, in this case, the spike protein, and other components, of course, of the virus, and will then present this to the immune system. And the immune system will use this signal, for example, to also trigger then the B cells to produce antibodies against that antigen. When you transfect cells from people with the mRNA, you may have heard that the mRNA got stabilized so that it is not readily degraded. What you have is that you have prolonged expression of spike protein on the membrane. So that means even when the spike protein is released from that cell, is taken up by those professional antigen-presenting cells that I was just talking about, that will stimulate, for example, T cells that will help to build the antibodies. The antibodies that are then built will still recognize the spike protein that is expressed on the transfected cell. It's still there. It's still there. And so, in contrast to the situation with natural infection, you will now also start to build antibodies against not the free spike protein only, but also the spike protein that is expressed on the surface of the transfected cell, which is an immature protein, and the antibodies are inappropriate, inadequate antibodies. But as you remember, spike will sit on all the cells that get transfected. Eh? If these lipid particles disseminate, and you know, to the liver, to the brain, to you know, all kinds of different other organs, the antibodies that have been built will recognize the spike that is expressed at the surface of the cells and will attack the cell. And that is completely different from the situation with natural infection.
This podcast is brought to you by McIlvaney Precious Metals. The presidential race is on. Are we in for a surprise upset or a victory for the incumbent? Either way, we're in for a wild ride. Protect yourself from economic uncertainty by investing in real, physical gold. McIlvaney Precious Metals is the trusted advisor with expertise in gold IRAs and compounding ounces strategies. They offer physical gold and silver backed by their triple protection policy. Guaranteed for purity and grade, guaranteed for repurchase at market prices, and guaranteed authentic by their in-house numismatists. I personally invest in gold with McIlvaney Precious Metals. To learn more about investing in gold, go to McIlvaney.com/case for gold. That's McIlvaney.com/case for gold. And now back to the podcast. Can you describe the what you know about the simian virus component of the vaccine and how that is transcribed into a person's DNA to dispose them to cancers? At least as I understand it, that's what we are hearing. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, well, that is not my particular field of expertise. I mean, a number of people have been taking a deep dive into this, but it is clear that the simian virus promoter should not have been used. I think it was only in the Pfizer vaccines, not in the Moderna. It is a promoter that will enhance, of course, if you like, the production of the material of the mRNA that will facilitate the transcription. But as there are remnants of this DNA, and as we know, as it is known that this promoter can also be a promoter for cancer cells, there is, of course, a likelihood. It all needs to be proven, but there is a theoretical likelihood, and that theoretically likelihood in its own right is already sufficient, or should be sufficient, to be a complete no-go for use of such components in vaccines. But so it is theoretically, it could accelerate, of course, the development of cancers. Is it feasible? Has it been proven in vitro? The answer to all those questions is yes. Is there clear examples of proof in vivo? That question is more difficult to answer because we simply don't have those data. Some people are now doing experiments with the vaccines, putting those vaccines on human cells in test tubes. But even that is not really representative for the in vivo situation. So we will end up, and some people are already doing this, that there is no doubt about this, that some people have started already to screen the DNA of human beings, of vaccinated people compared to unvaccinated, to see whether they can find in vivo, in those people, fragments of these DNA remnants of simian virus promoter or other bacterial DNA, for example, that has been used as a template for the synthesis of the mRNA, whether they can find those effectively integrated in the genome of the vaccinated individuals. So that data we don't have right now, but as I told you, already the fact that it could potentially integrate is already a reason for absolutely not using this in vaccines. And in the past as well, in all of the vaccines, if there is only little suspicion that something could be dangerous, could interfere with the genome, etc., then this needs to be removed, or it needs to be reduced at quantities that are so low that it is 200% certain that it can't cause any damage. And
Well,
none of this has been done. None of this has been done, of course.
apart from the cause of what that may be, there do seem to be many reports of increased cancer rates showing up in many countries, and that seems to be a real thing. Or would you say, is it some sort of hysterical reaction?
No, I don't think it's a hysterical reaction, not at all. But as I was saying, these things are extremely complex. And I don't know that the surge in cancer cases that we are seeing in all countries, there is absolutely no doubt about this, is not due to this phenomenon. It is much more complex. And to just give you a teaser, in my humble opinion, it is due to the fact that the T cells are now completely exploited in the vaccinated people to keep the virus under control. And those T cells and the T cells that keep the virus under control can be any type of T cell. And because these T cells are activated in a way that they can kill SARS-CoV-2 infected cells, no matter what the origin is of the T cell. So that means that now all of a sudden you are recruiting many, many T cells that originally were in fact designed, so to say, for example, to keep chronic diseases under control, like Epstein-Barr, like cytomegalovirus, but also to keep cancer cells under control. So now, if you mobilize all these T cells and you use them for keeping the highly infectious virus, because SARS-CoV-2, we continuously have vaccine breakthrough infections with virus that's highly infectious. So it takes an enormous effort of the cellular immune system to keep this virus under control, to kill virus-infected cells, and only the T cells can do this. But these T cells, of course, are no longer available to do the work that they normally do. Many people live with Epstein-Barr, with herpes infections, with cytomegalovirus. Many people live with kind of like dormant cancers, etc. And the reason why we keep those diseases under control are the T cells. So if you move them away from those targets, You shouldn't be surprised that we see this surge effectively in some of these chronic diseases and that I just mentioned, as well, of course, as in the cancer cases.
Do you have any opinion about the rumors that there are strange ingredients in these vaccines, things that have been identified as, let's say, graphene oxide and alleged self-assembling nanoparticles and other things like that? Is that anything that's come to your attention, or is do you think
Of
that
course
that's
not.
what do you think of that?
Yeah, well,
I don't have an opinion about it myself.
but you know, I mean, now opinions are all over the place, and there are even opinions, you know, it's very extreme. From even people say, well, the virus doesn't exist. Other people, you know, say that there is microchips in the vaccines and all this kind of stuff because, of course, lack of transparency and censorship and demonizing, you know, people like me and others who take a deep dive in the science. And then when things go wrong, lying to people and all this is, of course, an enormous breeding ground for conspiracy theories. And I must say, no, you know, there has been the way these vaccines have now been analyzed, characterized with all kinds of modern, sophisticated biochemical, biophysical, immunological methods has never been done before to that extent. So I'm sure that if we would start looking in detail, and some people have started doing this to a lot of vaccines, older vaccines, that we find also a number of artifacts which we don't know exactly what it is. But the point is, has there been any addition deliberately of nocive, you know, ingredients to the vaccines to do harm to people? There, my opinion is very, very clearly no. This is not the case. This is conspiracy. And with regard to graphene, because this has been at some point it became really a big thing. I had contact with a team of electron microscopists, and they clearly sh have shown that these were artifacts and not graphene. So these people, you know, being acquainted with them, knowing them since some time, I trust them. But theoretically, everything is possible because the statements that I make are statements that I can prove. These are things that you know, I can show, I can demonstrate, I can show you my analysis, etc. It's much more difficult, of course, to share an opinion on things that you have not been analyzing. But I can tell you, I worked for 3 or 4 years in the quality control department, the vaccines. The controls are extremely rigorous with all kinds of standard operating procedures, with specifications, with you know, control of every single batch, etc. So to me, it's kind of seems like very, very weird that all of a sudden all these controls have been thrown overboard, and that we would now find all kinds of impurities in those vaccines. But yeah. Things may happen, and I do not rule out that in some of these patches, ingredients have been found, maybe remnants from manufacturing devices or stoppers or whatever, but certainly not deliberately added to harm people. That's my opinion.
In the USA, our chief public health agency, which is the Center for Disease Control, CDC, continues to push shots and boosters and continues to lie about the safety and efficacy of the vaccine. How damaging is that kind of behavior to the authority of science?
It is extremely damaging. Of course, it is extremely damaging. But, you know, I'm always saying if you commit errors or even crimes at a very small scale, you can hide them. Right? And I have seen this happening with the Ebola vaccination in West Africa a number of years ago. It was also criminal. It was completely hidden. I revealed, disclosed everything, sent my reports all over the world, but it was complete silence. However, if you do this at a very large scale, like what has been done with this mass vaccination campaign, the truth will surface. The truth will surface, and those who have committed these crimes have been lying to the people and have not been taken care of their health and the safety of people will be severely, severely punished. So it's also a matter of patience. But you have also to understand that if these people would now go out and say, oh, wait a minute, yeah, we have been making some mistakes, it wasn't all right, we have to correct them, and we have to revise our opinion, these people would be stoned in the street, right? They have no choice. They have no choice than other than to stick, even if they completely see how wrong they have been, they have no other choice. They can only hope that something will happen that will distract from this issue, that will distract it, but it won't. And so they keep silent, or they just continue along the path that they have been walking along so far. But I can tell you that many of them must be desperate. But, you know, being together, they feel protected. You know, this is a big lobby. This is a big lobby, and they think that everybody thinks that the other will protect them, right? Which is not the case. But this is this typical feeling. You all have committed crimes, but you are a big group, and it's like the mafia. And you feel all together, you feel like a big team, and nobody can penetrate into the team, etc. It will collapse because the surface, the truth will surface. This has been a large scale experiment of gain of function on the very human population. This is something that will be reported in history for many, many generations to come, much longer than the talks that have taken place after World War I and World War II, etc.
Were you aware of the activities in the background in recent years of Peter Daszak and the Eco Health Alliance, and Fauci, and Ralph Baric at the University of North Carolina, and the other characters who were involved in the development of the COVID-19 and perhaps in the vaccines themselves?
Mm. No, I was, of course, retrospectively, I have also read, not a lot, but I've read some key documents. And I must say, to some extent, it also blew me away, right?
But it seems, seems nefarious, actually.
Yeah. That is, of course, but again, my viewpoint is that what has currently happened, or what is currently happening, that we have been turning through this mass vaccination a relatively harmless virus, not completely harmless, but relatively harmless. We have been turning this through massive gain of function into really a weapon of mass destruction, right? And that is the thing we first have to deal with. You know, every time in business, you have to prioritize. Well, if there is one thing that I put on the very top of the list, then it is how are we going to deal with the kind of virus that is circulating right now and is in no regard when it comes to its biological properties, comparable to the kind of Wuhan virus that invaded our countries 4 years ago. And this will be the big topic. For me, it's the only big topic. All the rest, we will have to deal with it afterwards, but I'm sure that many of the topics that are now on the agenda will simply be canceled for many reasons. Not to hide things, but
For
if
example, which topics are you speaking
For
of?
example, the origin of the virus, many of the lawsuits, etc., will all be canceled. These are things that take a lot of time. People don't imagine. Most people think I'm just a crazy man, but what I'm really predicting is a massive, massive tsunami. And then you have to see, you have hundreds of items on your agenda, but if such a thing happens, I mean, many of these agenda points just get wiped off the table, of course. So I think the trick is to be able to concentrate on what is most important. And I'm not saying that all of the other topics on the agenda are not important. They are very important, but we will have to deal with the most important things first and see what is left then to deal with. But to your point, I've also been surprised with all what's going on or what has been going on behind the scene, where people have this kind of very, very suspicious research projects and to some extent want to patent things or patenting things, viruses that then ultimately appear to be the circulating virus in the population. So how does that rhyme? It's very, very difficult. I don't know, but I'm a scientist and I'm saying the most important from a scientific viewpoint is now the threat of the currently circulating virus, given the dysregulated immune response in millions of vaccinated people, right?
Now, you've said very clearly in more than once that you expected a great deal of trouble in a fairly quick time frame upcoming in the months ahead. What can people do who are worried about their immune systems? We know here in the USA we have a number of organized doctors, such as Peter McCullough and his group, who have various treatment protocols for vaccination problems, namely spike proteins that's circulating in people's system. Do you have any idea on your own what people might do in the face of this problem?
James, you are recording all this, and I'm very happy about this because nobody believes me. Nobody, even these frontline doctors, don't believe me when I say, guys, none of your treatments will work because it will go too fast. It will go extremely fast. It will be a hyper acute a tsunami, right? Where people who start to show symptoms will pass away within 24 hours, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Nobody believes me. Of course, nobody believes me. That is why it is good and it is exceptional that you can record my words. And in the sense that, okay, I mean, it is documented, right? So because what happens is that what is deteriorating the situation is every single reinfection, re-exposure of people who have been vaccinated. And you will see, you can write this down or it is recorded. You will see that what will happen, for example, in the next coming weeks, is that you will see that we will have more and more cases of more and more serious long COVID. please remind it, more cases, a higher prevalence of more cases and more severe cases of long COVID.
That is the chronic presentation of the disease.
They will start to replace the surge of the cancers, right? So things will go, remember, from an acute disease, I just explained it, acute self-limiting. Now we have a more chronic phase. It will end with a hyper-acute phase, a huge wave. And of course, nobody, I've been studying this like for 4 years. I know what I'm talking about. I'm probably the only person, in all modesty, who understands the immunology behind this. And so what I can advise, and I have done many, many videos to make people aware, to all the vaccinated people, is that they should start. What do they need to do? Well, they need to avoid reinfection. It's very simple, because it's the reinfection that is now the cause. The reinfection in the vaccinated people, that is what the culprit is. That is what is responsible for deteriorating the situation. So if your immune system cannot avoid infection, what can you do? Well, the only thing you can do, it's very, very simple, is take antivirals, of course. The only difference is that you will not be able to wait for taking these antivirals till you have symptoms. So what I'm advising is, as soon as people see that in one or the other state, for example, in the United States, this thing starts with, hospitalizations and deaths going up very rapidly, they need to take antivirals prophylactically, not wait till they have any symptoms. Because I can tell you, I'm in Belgium, if it starts in the US, or if it starts in Israel, or if it starts in the UK, I bet you that within a few days, you will see the same scenario in many of these highly vaccinated countries, but not in Africa, of course. No problems with long COVID in Africa. There will be no tsunami in Africa, right?
Yeah.
Because herd immunity, we don't have herd immunity.
And low vaccination rate.
Of course.
Now, when you say antiviral, are we talking about these pharmaceuticals that were demonized by the public health, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and others like it?
You have been following the evolution of the FDA, their position towards ivermectin in the recent days?
Yes. Well, they seem to be making a pivot.
Yeah. What I have been predicting already half a year ago, that the public health authorities are finally going to have mandates for ivermectin vaccination. I mean, this seems a little bit hilarious, right? But that is the kind of evolution that we are going to see, because which antivirals could you use? Listen, when you hear Pierre Curie and other experts, I mean, the results with ivermectin are fabulous. It is very safe. It is the only antiviral that is cost-effective, that is widely available, can be supplemented in sufficient quantities, and that is safe. There is simply no alternative. Yeah, maybe hydroxychloroquine, etc., but this is, let's say, the same ball game. And the public health authorities will come too late with their ivermectin mandates. But you see already how they are evolving, how their position is evolving.
Also, you can see how that, if they do that, that will really disorder the reputation of medicine.
But
worse than it already is.
Who cares?
Well, it's not so much.
Wait a minute. The thing I want your audience to understand is that what we will be facing in terms of the hyper-acute COVID crisis that is imminent is that we will have, and that is the positive news, we will have to build a completely new world, right? So there won't be the FDA anymore, or all these folks, I don't know where they will be going, what will happen to them. It's very uncertain, but it's very, very clear that when this starts, our hospitals will collapse. And when the hospitals collapse, that means that the chaos, in all kinds of layers of society, financial, economic, social, you name it, the chaos will be complete, right? And that is what I'm very clearly predicting. And I'm not a fool. I'm a scientist, right? I insist people can look at my curriculum. I've been talking like 4 years about this. I've written many, many articles. People can ask me questions. I'm teaching online courses, lectures on epidemiology and pandemics and epidemics, etc. And it's very strange for me to make such statements, but
Well,
I'm hiding it because I'm 200% convinced that it will happen.
one final question. Have you been personally persecuted for spreading this information? Because that's certainly the case in the USA, where doctors have opposed the public health establishment and the medical establishment. Have you been under attack?
Well, I've been a little bit under attack in Belgium by a bunch of immunologically or scientifically illiterate journalists, etc. But I've not really been suffering. But listen, of course, I have my strategy. First of all, I've been lucky. Why? Because I'm still, a veterinary doctor, right? I'm not a medical doctor. I have not a practice in medical, I have not a medical practice. And secondarily, I've never been naming certain names. I've never been attacking people individually. When I talk about, idiots, public health authorities, etc., I have no problem if I talk about the WHO, but I'm not going to cite particular names, for example. And the third thing is that everything I'm saying, even if I make very strong statements, I can back them up with scientific data, right? My discourse is scientific. I'm a scientific activist, right? But I'm not the guy who turns to conspiracies or things that I cannot prove or that I don't know for sure. Not necessarily pretending they're wrong, but if I don't know it for sure, you won't hear me about this. If it's not my field of expertise, I will delegate it to other people, etc. But I will always very clearly express my opinion on the things I know without attacking people in person. Right. So, I've not been suffering too much. And also, I've been being in Belgium, I've primarily been speaking in the US and abroad, not that much in my country, because I wanted to reach as many people as possible. Yeah. If I give an interview in Belgium, there is 30 people who will watch. If I do it on a US platform, I can add a few zeros. Right.
Well, this has certainly been and is going to continue to be a very strange period of world history. I want to thank you very much for coming on the podcast. And this will be a bit of a cold shower for a lot of listeners out there. But I think your message is very important, and we should be very careful of how human affairs proceed in the months ahead. So thank you very much, Dr. Geert Vandenbosch. Is there any particular website that you have that you would encourage listeners to go to for information?
Yeah, well, we publish all the information, all my articles, interviews, etc., are published on the website Voice for Science and Solidarity. So, Voice for Science and Solidarity, because I think these are two notions that are very important to science, and also solidarity, no discrimination whatsoever towards vaccinated people. Like, it was also completely ridiculous to discriminate or the unvaccinated at the beginning of these vaccination campaigns. So, there people can find information, and I'm sorry for the harsh message. But I'm always saying somebody needs to tell the truth. And since I'm 200% convinced of what I'm saying, I dare to do so. Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you very much for daring to do that. And we'll stand by and see how this plays out.